Hey everyone, welcome to our next edition of Taking Stock. I know it's been a few weeks. I apologize. I hope everyone is enjoying a wonderful summer and get some rest and relaxation. And I am really excited to welcome Jessica Mitch to our discussion today. Jessica is the co-founder and CEO of Momentum. Momentum is a business that Clarkston entered into a partnership with a couple of years ago. They're a really, really interesting company, a fascinating story, and I'm really excited for the opportunity for not only you to get the opportunity to meet Jessica, but me as well. And I'm excited to understand her background, how she got into the world of professional development and training, and what led her to develop the Momentum business. So really excited for the opportunity to meet Jessica. I think you'll really enjoy the opportunity to hear from her, and look forward to chatting with you on the other side. Enjoy. Hey, Jessica, how are you?
Hey, Steve, I'm good.
Welcome to Taking Stock. How's your Friday going so far?
It's been a great week. You know, it's July, so we get a lot of out-of-office emails this week. But otherwise, we've had some great calls and
awesome.
A good week.
Yeah, awesome. And looking forward to chatting with you and getting to know you a little bit and our listeners getting to know you and your story, which is really a fascinating story. And one of the things, we'll get into the Momentum story, but one of the things I really enjoy on your site, there's a statement that says learning is a lifelong process. And it's clear in the research that I've done and getting to know you and your background that that is something that you're truly, truly passionate about. So take us through kind of your experiences. I believe you have you started in HR and obviously have always had an interest in people, talent development, people development. Talk us through a little bit of that journey, if you can.
Yeah. Well, I'll start even a little bit before my professional journey started, but I'm dyslexic. So I've always had, I wasn't diagnosed with dyslexia until I hit high school. Just kind of fumbled my way through K through 12, trying to figure out how to adapt. And as a result, I've had a real keen interest in education, and I've had I got to get different perspective on education growing up because of that challenge. And so when I graduated college, a good advisor of mine asked me, like, what do you really, really want to do? What's the legacy you want to leave? What do you want to do with your life? And I was like, I would love to start a school that would change the face of education. And in my mind, that was I'll do that when I'm 65 after my business career and have like resources and ability to do it. It was not something that was an immediate path. You know, I was thinking right after school, I wanted to go in business. My parents are entrepreneurs. They actually run a training coaching company that they've run for almost 30 years now. So I knew I wanted to do something in business, but I also have a degree in religious studies and dance. So I wasn't necessarily, I went to school for school's sake.
If you could figure out a way to pull all of that together with the religious studies and the dance, that would be incredibly impressive.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about both the religious studies and dance is it's just in life generally.
Yeah, sure.
The intention I set when I left college and went into the workforce, and 2 weeks after I graduated, I got a job at Red Hat in HR. And the company at the time was 3,000 employees worldwide. In the first 6 months I was there, they became the first open source software company to hit $1 billion in revenue. And that was really exciting. And I just fell in love with technology, the tech industry, the culture of the tech industry. There's this real like work fast, be scrappy, and change the world mentality. And
you're like an entrepreneurial spirit, which just permeates.
Yeah. And I tell my friends, I'm like, it's like walking, when you walk into work and people have their lights on, because, you know, the fear of going into a corporate work environment is going into like an office setting with like your Swinline stapler. And you've seen the movies, you've seen the shows. And Red Hat wasn't like that. You walked in and it's like people had their lights on. They were ready to move and they really believed that they were making change. And that was just contagious. And that's where I got my, start in human resources. And about 3 years after that happened, I met an entrepreneur who was starting a school, a code school, and had a conversation with him. I was on an internal committee at Red Hat. Hey, how can we help support this effort? You know, the war on talent was happening then. Red Hat, in the time that I was there, went from 3,000 employees to over 10,000 employees worldwide in, you know, a 2-year span.
Yeah.
And constantly needing to find new talent. So I went and met with him and his founder or co-founders, and we talked about how could Red Hat support this in effort. And then that turned into, hey, you should come join us, come start a school. And so, you know, several years after graduating college, I realized, like, oh, I'm helping start a school that's on a pathway to changing what education looks like. We are actually, you know, going into the existing workforce and giving people the opportunity to completely reskill. And again, in that situation, going into work with people that had their lights on. We have a phrase, one of the, when we were coming up with a company name for Momentum, there's a Francis Willard quote that reads, "The world is wide and I will not waste my life in friction when it could be turned into momentum." And to me, that's like, that's the people that we attract and that we want to continue attracting, is those people that hit that point in friction and decide to do something with it and take off with it. And those are the kind of people that we work with. And those are the kind of people that are on our staff.
Yeah, one of the things, and we'll get into the impacts of COVID certainly, but one of the things that is fascinating about what's going on in the world right now is how many people are actually hitting that friction point.
Yeah.
And I think COVID has forced people to reevaluate where they are in their careers and to use it as an opportunity to course correct in a multitude of directions.
Yep.
But it's just fascinating to see how, you know, your business model is very much based upon that. So talk a little bit about kind of the Momentum story, kind of developing the business. I think the ideation and the passion is very clear within you, but just also kind of building a business, what that process looked like. You know, talk us through that.
Yeah, so I can't really tell the Momentum story without talking about the company I mentioned before. The startup that I left Red Hat for, we had a great, I was with that company for I think 3 something years, but we had a really good run as a startup. We took on a lot of investment money and it burned out. Not so much the investment money, but just the company in general. And that's a longer story we won't get into, but what was happening, that was in 2014, 2015, what you started seeing was in the bigger cities and metro areas, especially the Valley, there was this big response to how are we going to fill these jobs in technology? And at the same time, technology is a disruptor. We know like the Facebooks of the world, et cetera, have really changed a lot of landscape and business. And so in that time period, 2014, 2015, you're seeing this rise of this concept of vocational schools and apprenticeships happening again for the technology industry. And you're also seeing all the big companies in the Valley that, you know, really run the tech sector saying, we no longer care about things like college degrees. And so those forces coming together created a wave of this first wave of technology education that was outside of the university model. And so code schools I was very, very early in to this concept of code education and code schools. Uh-huh. And that the company, the Iron Yard, was part of that. They were one of the first out of the gate. And the first to be also outside of the big, they had a presence in the Southeast. So they were outside of these big markets.
Sure.
And really saw like the Raleigh Durhams and the Nashvilles and the, you know, the Minneapolises, those markets of the world that were going to need this type of training. And so a lot of the core of the team at Momentum came from that experience. We all kind of cut our grit. We learned the lessons of what to do and what not to do through that initial startup. And we had done a really, really good job with that company, had a great presence in where I live. I live in Raleigh. We've built Momentum out of the Raleigh-Durham region. And when that company closed, it was actually the community that really came together. And I got a couple calls from people. There are several people that I went to their offices to visit to be like, hey, this thing's wrapping down. And every single one of them looked at me and said, okay, cool, what are you going to do next? Like, get this thing going.
Yeah.
And it was just this, it kind of just happened like almost serendipitously with, again, I keep going back to that original intention. Like, I've always wanted to do something like this, but it was a lot of the community coming together. And we raised a seed round really quickly. And the Iron Yard, I think my last day on payroll there was November something. And December 1, we were going with Momentum. And that was, I give a lot of credit to the entire technology community locally, just assuming like, hey, you're going to keep this going because we need it. We've sure. heard people from you. We see the need and we don't want there to be a void. And so that's how Momentum was born. And a lot of our staff is from that experience. And so we had the benefit of going through a trial period with another startup and figuring out and learning a lot, and being able to come into Momentum just with that much more power and energy.
Yes, it seems like in a lot of ways it was this perfect storm. So you have kind of your personal passion and what you had done, you know, pre your professional career and in the early days of your professional career. Also this kind of sense of community within the Raleigh-Durham area and being pushed to kind of continue this forward. And then also with people that you had worked with at Iron Yard and the sense of almost responsibility and accountability to that group, all those things coming together to create this perfect storm and to move Momentum forward.
Yeah. Yeah. We had the benefit of being like really early in with Iron Yard, and sometimes really early in doesn't always make it, but you can learn from that. And we looked at the landscape, and one of the things I saw early was there's a huge opportunity for employers to start taking back the responsibility of training their workforce. And that was something that we hadn't fully tapped into or had enough time really to tap into. Iron Yard was doing some things in corporate training towards the end. And that was one area where I'm like, there's a huge opportunity here. And it's kind of a business I'm familiar with. My parents did that. You know, I've seen those things done and seen success and thought, hey, there's a big opportunity here to transform the workforce.
Yeah. You know, so if I could build upon just a word you use, transform, and Jessica and I, we were talking offline and about our shared love of podcasts, and I was listening to one earlier this week, and like many, talking about just the changes in the workforce idea, primarily around how people are more moving from job to job to job, and that is accelerating. And a lot of people have used COVID as an opportunity to reevaluate where they are in their careers. One thing that they said, which I found really interesting, is that job security, certainly if I look at my parents' generation, job security used to equate to I'm holding one job for 30 years, and that equates to security, and that equates to stability, and that looks solid on a resume. Now what you see is a model where job security actually, or career security, more ties to jumping from job to job to job, because it shows that you are expanding your network. It shows that you're expanding your skills. To me, if I think about Momentum, and a lot of that is training and developing for a career and building your skills. Talk a little bit about kind of the conversations that you have at Momentum with potential employers and kind of their view of training and development and how you've seen that evolve over the years.
I would say the pandemic has been really helpful to them kind of all waking up and realizing that the urgency and what they have to do is like they have a lot of responsibility in this.
Sure.
because of this job, you know, what you mentioned, employees are not loyal in most parts, especially in technology. And there's a reason for that. As you mentioned, to continue to gain skills and progress in tech, you have to be able to be very adaptive to different languages. And how you get that experience is by moving from company to company. So what we've seen the realization happen in 2020, between the pandemic and a lot of social unrest, is companies really understanding and looking at themselves for the first time and saying, what are we doing from an equity standpoint? What are we doing, you know, from a diversity, equity, inclusion standpoint? And we are not where we should be. And that is the majority of the conversations that we're having right now with companies is, hey, we realize that we need to train talent to make sure that we have who we need, because there's also there's both a skills gap, but there's also a amount of people gap. There's not enough people. I just read a stat before we got on the phone. Cybersecurity, for example, has taken off. In 2019, the amount of unfilled jobs in cybersecurity were 2.9 million.
Wow.
This year, it's 4 million. So companies realize we have to reskill people. And what they're now saying is we have to reskill the kind of people that we can make sure look like our communities. We are no longer going to be, we cannot afford to have the hiring practices that we had yesterday. And we have some real responsibility to take to make sure that we have a staff that's representative of the communities that we're in, and that also is a diverse and equitable staff. And for us to do that, we can't look at the pipeline. The pipeline, that we've got problems with the pipeline in general. There's not enough people. We have a $4 million person gap in the United States in cybersecurity alone in technology, right? So they're acknowledging we're going to have to look internally and look externally, and we're going to have to invest in reskilling. And then we're also going to have to provide those upskilling opportunities to the staff that we do have so that they don't have to leave to get this, get more innovative skills, that at least they can stay around a little bit longer. And how do we incentivize that? And employees, for the first time in a long time, have a lot of leverage.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think that the best way for, to your point, the best way for any employer to demonstrate a commitment is to invest in the growth and development of their employees.
Exactly.
And knowing that employees want to grow their skills, if an employer is not providing that opportunity, investing in professional development and training for those employees, they're going to leave.
Yep.
And then you're going to be left in a place where you're starting from ground zero and needing to bring in new people. The best way to develop, I always loved, kind of the Procter & Gamble model. They, for years have had a model where they promote from within.
Yep.
And they rather grow their own people and develop their own people as opposed to hire people from the outside. And certainly there's some cultural kind of assimilation things that come with that. Yep. But just this commitment to development, I don't even think that's something that is a nice to have. I think that it's a absolute critical imperative for a company to compete right now.
Yeah. And we're having conversations with, there's so many organizations. What I love about our partnership with Clarkston is that the relationships that the Clarkston family has goes beyond just the tech industry, because the tech industry has other problems, but there's unique challenges. But if you look at companies that are in the consumer product goods space or food chains and those type of companies, they have a lot of workers already existing that are in low skill or middle skill jobs. And that's where I think the real opportunity is, because we had a great call with a big company yesterday who, their IT person has at any given time, his individual plate, 200 open recs.
Yeah.
He cannot have to worry about those 200 open recs and then the internal bleeding that we were just talking about of people leaving. That's a big problem. And they're really looking at, hey, we have all these workers on the front lines and we know there's a lot of talent there. And that is where we need to start with. We need to go there first. And what we're doing at Momentum is saying, okay, you do need to do that. How do we make that sustainable for you? Because you also can't pull those people out of their jobs entirely, because those are critical positions too.
Yeah, of course.
And there's a labor crunch there. So that's where we've gotten really smart about through the pandemic of how do we take what this model of education that used to be really thought of as immersive completely and make it so it's a little bit more module and still have the same outcomes so that we can support workforces in that type of transformation.
Yeah. In addition, I think agile is another buzzword is really important, because the pace of change in technology is so rapid that, you are not going to be trained in a skill and then thank you, see you later, come back to me in 10 years. It needs to be a never ending process, right? And you can never, we talk about with our clients all the time, training can't be, and development can't be thought as a check the box, one time activity. With the pace of change in technology and industry now, you need to continually be investing.
And the muscle you have to teach and have to strengthen in people is how to learn. That's number one. We'll talk to companies. They want us to train in their languages and yada, yada, yada. And that's all good and fine. But the secret sauce of what we do is the way that we deliver the training is that person's developing that muscle on how to learn. And when we get every one of our surveys that we get back when students come out of our program, is that's what they say. Like, the number one thing I actually gain from this is you throw another language at me tomorrow that they didn't teach me and I'm going to figure it out, because I now have that muscle that I didn't have before. And it's that's like the secret behind it all. Yeah. At the end of the day, we're giving people that ability to continue learning.
Yes, it's kind of like the, you know, teach a man to fish. You kind of, you know, fed him for life type mindset.
Exactly.
So what regarding, you know, code has come up a bunch of times. One of the things that I would gather was a big shift in your business model over the past 15, 16 months was more of a shift towards virtual education.
Yes.
Right. So how was that shift for your business? And what do you see? I'm not talking in September when things start, but I'm talking 2022, 2023. Have you seen, like, do you see a potential transformation in the way that you're kind of delivering training going forward?
Absolutely. Yeah, the shift was quick, literally.
Yeah, of course. 10 years of treads accelerated it to let's go.
Yeah, I have some new gray hairs from last March and April, as does the rest of the team. We had a little bit resisted the idea of virtual before the pandemic. We had started, we had one prospective student. We were really trying to find a way to make it work for her that we were starting to think about, oh, well, we could Zoom this person in. So, and we, you know, had all the philosophical debates about that. And then literally overnight, we were now operating the entire business on Zoom. We were in the last couple weeks of a program we were running. And I was kind of head in the sand about this. I have to give my instructor team a lot of credit. They were like, hey, Jessica, we might not see you for a while. I was like, well, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Like, it'll be fine.
Exactly.
I was wrong. But what we noticed, the first thing that we noticed when we went to Zoom is that I think was really interesting is there is no longer a back of the classroom from an engagement perspective. And I want to make it very clear, we're working with adult learners. I've heard nightmare stories and I follow what's happening in K through 12 education. I don't know if K through 12 educate, like virtual seems to have just been horrible for youth education.
Yeah. Having two high school age kids, it was interesting.
Let's yeah. that. But for adult learners, it was really amazing. And we saw an instant increase in engagement because again, there is no, you cannot sit in a physical classroom space. Somebody's sitting in the back corner. Just by way of the way it's structured. That doesn't exist on a virtual platform. So that was an immediate difference that we noticed is it gave the instructors ability to meet a lot of different learners where they are with their learning styles. You have over virtual, first off, everybody's kind of in the same space and screen. You have the ability to share links and to have a chat box. So the folks that don't want to use their voice to ask questions, but they're really comfortable in chat can get their questions through. Those type of things that we noticed really early on. And I think what we're starting to talk about moving forward is that we will be virtual first, but we will be meeting in person for certain social engagements, orientations and graduations and those type of things. But otherwise, we've really loved the virtual environment and the instructors really, really like it. It gives them a space too where the class is over. They actually like can do those things like run to the restroom, like go right. And like there's this physical space that is healthy. Some of those boundaries are healthy and give the students that extra rope that they have to, you know, climb up to learn. And we've seen a lot of success with it. It was surprising to us at first, and now it feels like second nature. And the other benefit is, of course, we're preparing people for the technology workforce ultimately, and so we need to reflect the way the workforce works. Before COVID, we were in a very tech SaaS kind of incubator space. The students got to see what other companies were doing in real time every day. That was important. That's not important anymore. Now they need to understand how to code in an agile and virtual environment. They need to understand, you know, how to pair program in a virtual environment. They will not be on Teams anymore where there's everybody in the same office. So we have to reflect the workforce.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to, and I might put you on the spot a little bit with this, but it's okay. Cause you are, you're so incredibly passionate around this. And as we kind of close out our chat here, I was hoping you could share, almost bring to life a success or an outcome that you're most proud of. And I'm sure you've got a ton from either a learner or an employer perspective. But if you could walk through that, I think it would be really helpful to understand an example that you take a lot of pride in that I think best encapsulates, you know, what the Momentum story is all about.
Yeah. There's so many. If I could think of just one at the top of my head, because this graduate came across me, my LinkedIn today, we worked with a graduate who was a veteran, incredibly smart, came out of the military and was kind of trying to find their way. They were flipping pizzas up the street at a place called Pie Pushers downtown Durham. Some of your audience might have eaten there. Not utilizing their skills, you know, at all.
Yeah.
And came through the program and right out of the gate got an amazing job with IBM and has just continued climbing and went from the went from like flipping pizzas for minimum wage or less than probably to a six-figure job in under a year. And that to me, it's those our students are what I'm most proud of because it's multi-generational change. We also worked with a student last year who, and I'll promise you I'll end it at this one.
That was great.
She has a master's degree in math education. And I think I just finished her PhD, was working before the pandemic at Old Navy because of whatever circumstances. We all know that teaching, especially in the public school system, is challenging and doesn't pay very well. This woman was working at Old Navy. We had somebody checking you out at Old Navy with a master's degree in education. Okay. Like talent exists everywhere. Yeah. And it's really important that I think what this job has also taught me is like, don't take for granted anybody you're talking to anywhere you go, because people are so talented and it's just a matter of circumstance sometimes that you know, we had a single mom working at Old Navy and she, not to surprise you, she was brilliant in the class. Did amazing and interviewed at like five different firms as she came out of the program, some really impressive big name companies, and then also a really innovative startup based out of Denver, Colorado. They gave her an offer. She was the only Black woman to be hired by this company. It was like an 80-person team. They gave her a fantastic offer. And then they asked her to join their, to consult with their C-suite to make sure that she was no longer the only Black person on their team.
Yeah.
She's built out a whole diversity initiative. She's gone and recruited other people that look like her to the company. She is like, again, going back to that concept, lights on. She goes up to work and she is lights on. What can I do here to make change? And she loves her career and she just bought her first house. And, Erica Parks Murray on your team with her. So if you run into Erica, anybody out there listening to this, make sure to talk to Erica about Nicole and her story. And we're just so proud of her. And again, it's just, it's working with people that say, I refuse to live my life in friction when it could be turned into momentum.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I know from a Clarkson perspective, it is just it gives me a ton of pride to play a very small part in the continued growth and development of Momentum. I can't think of anything that we could be doing that should give us more pride and the ability to have such an impact. And those two examples that you shared, I know there's countless others, but it's an awesome story and looking forward to continued growth. And I know you've got some big meetings coming up that are going to hopefully help support that continued growth.
Yes.
congrats on all of your success and looking forward to, you know, hearing more about the journey.
Well, thank you. And thank you to everybody. The Clarkson partnership has been awesome for us. We've really enjoyed everybody that we've worked with, and anybody out there listening, you want to support Momentum, give us a call and we'll tell you what we're doing and how it might work with your clients.
Awesome. Thanks, Jessica. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Thank you, everyone, very much for listening. And Jessica, thank you very much for sharing your background and most importantly, sharing your passion for what you do. It is truly inspiring to learn from people and get to understand kind of what makes them tick. And Jessica has proven to be just an incredibly successful entrepreneur, and the passion and pride she takes in sharing those successes that she referenced at the end of our discussion. I think it's absolutely fantastic, and without a doubt, it is going to help to continue to fuel Momentum's growth in the market And I just love her desire to make a difference, not just for business, but more importantly for the people that she's working with. So great stuff. Jessica, thank you again very much, and appreciate everyone listening and looking forward to future discussions here on Taking Stock. Have a great day.